Please note these names for Surah Fatiha. Sayyid Masood Raza, Afaq Ara Begum, Yusuf Ara Begum, Wahidun Nisa Begum, Wald Adek Hassan Zaidi, Hawid Raza, Wald Zahid Raza, Anwar Taj, Hinte Hashim Rahmatullah, Sayyid Ahmad Naqvi Ibn Sayyid Muhammad Asgar, Hassan Imam Ibn Haqi Imam Radhavi. Please recite Fatiha. Allahu ni'mal wakil, ni'mal mawla wa ni'mal nasir. A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir la'in rajim. Bismillahir rahmanir rahim. Alhamdulillahi rabbil alamin. Wa salatu wa salam ala ashrafil anbiya'i wal mursalin. Sayyidina wa maulana Abul Qasim Muhammad. Wa ala alihi at-tayyibin at-tahirin al-ma'sumin. From amongst the lessons that Imam Hussein has taught us in Karbala, one of the most important lessons that he has taught in knowing the principles of life is Ithar. And Ithar is a lesson that we learn throughout Karbala, in every aspect of Karbala. Everyone, they did Ithar. They did Ithar, and when you see Ithar itself, it is a sign of Shias. Someone who wants to be with Imam Hussein, then he must have Ithar. He must exhibit this quality of Ithar. If he does not, then that person cannot be with the Imam. Because in Karbala, what was given by everyone was Ithar. Now when it comes to Ithar, we said that there are two elements that make up Ithar. The first element of Ithar is to give. And to give what you need, what is needed by you. When you give what is needed by you, then this is Ithar, not something that is extra, but that which you are in need of. And hence, this giving is what makes a person have character and possess character. There was a person who used to give Eid to children. When Eid comes about, you know that, for example, there are those who give Eid to children, and the children go around and they give you Eid, $1 each, this and that. So this one person, when he used to give Eid to children, so what happened is that he used to watch them and he used to follow them. And we would ask him, why are you following them? He says, I want to see what they do with their money. I want to see whether they keep it for themselves or would they give it to someone else. Because from there I will know if these people have character or not when they grow up. Hence, this is, you know, the fact is that when a person gives away what he has, this is a character, a quality that he possesses. You can say that, you know, if we give away what we need, then it will be very difficult for us. If you give away your mortgage money, it's going to be difficult for you. And there's no denying that. Yes, it is difficult. No one says it's easy. And no one said being a Shia is easy. No one said that. It is difficult. Life will be difficult. Imam Ali's life was difficult. Look at Imam Ali's life. His whole life was difficult. Imam Hassan's life was difficult. Giving away what he had. Doing Isar doesn't mean that you're going to lead a good life and having a lot. Isar means that you're giving away what you have. It is going to be a difficult life. But that is what decides the difference between those who will help Imam Hussein and those who don't. This is what it decides. You want to be a helper of Hussein, you want to be with Imam Hussein in Karbala, you want to fulfill the pledge you make every week when you read Ziyarat-e-Waritha, then it means that you have to lead a life and have this quality of Isar in you. Salawat ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. You know, this, if you want to be the helper of Imam al-Zaman, then you have to have this quality in you. Someone who doesn't have Isar cannot be the helper of Imam. My friends, there are two things that we need to discuss when it comes to Karbala and Imam al-Zaman. Just as a point, I'm making this point, and we'll go on from here. So you understand this. There's one similarity between Imam Hussein and Imam al-Zaman, and there's one difference between Imam Hussein and Imam al-Zaman. What Imam Hussein will do and what Imam al-Zaman will do, there's one similarity and there's one difference. The similarity is that Imam Hussein, in his movement was rapid. It was fast. It did not give anyone a chance to think, to decide. Imam Hussein, the way he went towards Karbala, he did not give anyone a chance to think and decide. The caravan was going. If you want to join it, then you had to make the decision right then and there. You couldn't tell Imam Hussein that, Hussein, just wait. I want to go back and we want to have a meeting with my family and I'll decide. If you do that, the caravan is gone. You needed to decide right then and there. The caravan, just jump on board and you're on. If you don't jump, it's gone. That's how Imam Hussein's caravan was. Many people didn't come on the caravan. Even though they loved Imam Hussein, they would have given their life for Imam Hussein. The reason they didn't come with Imam Hussein is because they took too long deciding whether they should or not. Why? Because they were not ready. They are not prepared. In order to join Imam Hussein, you need to be prepared. You need to be ready. If you're not ready, you cannot join him. I mean, imagine this. Zuhair met him. One time, he just met him. What do? He just met him one time. He had to decide right then and there. So what do? He come back to his wife and says, listen, I give you talaq. You go back home. I'm going. Right? How it happens? Now, if we were in that situation and Imam Hussein is telling us, are you on board? Are you coming with me? Most of us will be like, I have to ask my interior minister. By the time you ask, Imam Hussein is gone. You can't get on, my friends. You can't get on. You see, this movement of Imam Hussein, if you learn this, if you understood this point, then this is the similarity between Imam Hussein's movement and Imam Zamana's movement. Imam Zamana's movement also will be so fast and rapid, you will not have chance to think and decide. If you're not ready for him, then you will lose that train. You will miss that train. My friends, this is the reason that if you want to be with the Imam and the helper of the Imam, then these qualities that are necessary, they must be instilled in us. If you do not instill that, do not think and do not be in the delusion that you can be with the Imam. You cannot. We cannot be with the Imam. We just cannot be with the Imam. Right? This is one thing. The difference between Imam Hussein and Imam Zamana is this. That was a similarity. The difference is this. That in Imam Hussein's time, only 72 people were ready. Only 72 people were ready to get on board. Others, it doesn't mean that there were no other people who were that good. No, others were good also, and they could have given their sacrifices also, but they weren't ready to get on the train. But in Imam Hussein's time, only 72 are ready. In Imam Zamana's time, there will be thousands who will be ready. There will be thousands and thousands who will be ready. Yes. When Imam will come under him, there will be thousands of soldiers who are ready. Thousands of them. It doesn't mean that, you know, we became better. It doesn't mean that we became better. You know that, oh, you know what? Alhamdulillah, you know, we have become better. This and that. Now I'll say, yes, we did become better. You know, so Maulana, are you trying to say that we are better than the people of those days that used to live with the Imam? And I will say with a certainty, yes, we are. Yes, we are. Maulana, how can you say that? Meaning the people who were trained by Imam Ali, the people who were trained by Imam Hassan, the people who lived under them, who were the Shia, you are saying that we who are living in this time, the Shias who are living in this time are better than those Shias? I'll say yes, they are. Yes, they are better than them. And there are more of the Shias than them. How can you say that? It's because those Shias there didn't have a Karbala to learn from. They didn't have Imam Hussein to learn from. Imam Hussein's institution and Karbala has taught us in such a way that Imam Zamana will have thousands of Shias with him. This is what Karbala has done for us. Yes, we are living post-Karbala. Learning the lessons of Karbala. Yes, the Shias will be better. They're being trained by Karbala. It's not something easy. That's why Imam Zamana will have so many people, my friends. We just need to make dua to Allah that Allah, let us be one of those people who will be with Imam. Salawat ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. So the first element of ithar, my friends, is what? Is giving, sacrificing. This is the first element. You need to have that in you. Now the second element is harder. This is a little bit more difficult. Giving your mortgage money away is easy. Really, it's easy. And you'll say, Maulana, we were thinking that, you know, inshallah, we will see in our next life if you will give. What you need, yes. Giving away what you need really is easier than the next element that I'm about to mention. Really, it's easier, my friends. Giving away what is needed by you is easier than what? Than giving it to someone other than Allah. The second element of ithar is to give it to someone other. Not Allah, someone else. Give it to someone else. This is hard. You see why? Because the thing that A person, it's easy for him to realize this is Allah's, it belongs to him. So if he takes it, he can even justify it. Allah took it back. He's the one who gives it. Inshallah, he will give more. But when you give it to someone else, then he's not going to give it back to you. It's gone. My friends, this is very difficult. Giving it to someone else is very difficult. I'm telling you. Really, it's difficult. You know, if you are with me, then I'll give an example. Salawat alhamdulillah. Shaitan was an abd of Allah. He was a servant of Allah until he was asked to make sajda to someone else. Understand this. Until Shaitan was asked to give it up to someone else. Shaitan said, Allah, for you everything, but who's he? Who is he? Why should I give it to him? He's worse than I am. Allah, for you anything, but who is he? My friends, Shaitan did not mind giving it to Allah. Because Allah, you deserve it. It's yours. I know it's yours. But this person, I can't give it to someone else. My friends, why was it hard for Shaitan to give it to someone else? Why was it difficult? You see, just like Allah is Malik and Rabb and doesn't like to see anyone else in his position. Worst thing Allah, the thing that Allah hates the most is shirk. Don't make anyone like me. Sometimes what happens is that an abd also doesn't like to see another abd. He wants to be the only abd. He wants to be the only abd. He doesn't like to see someone else. You see, this hasad comes in place. This envy comes in place. Right? For example, you know, you give $1,000 to the masjid. You know, I gave $1,000. You know, mashallah, he's a donor. Then you see someone else give $1,000. Now, you have become two. So your importance has gone 50% down. See, friends, it goes very deep in the heart and touches you there. Right? Why did he have to give? Right? Because what happened is that you have to give it up for someone else. You see, you don't like to see someone else also come. Why? Because if you are alone as an abd, there's importance for you. If someone else also becomes in your place, then you also get upset. My friends, this is very easy to do something, not for Allah. Allah is saying, do it for someone else. Give it to someone else. That's difficult for us. That is what is hard in ithar. Really, I'll give you some practical examples and then we'll understand what this means. Salawat ala Muhammad. You know, we have people who sponsored the food. And they sponsored the food and you see that they have a list of names to read Fatiha because they sponsored the food. And they come to Maulana and give him the list of people to read the Fatiha. And so the Maulana now reads the list of Fatiha. But what happened is that he reads the wrong list. He reads the wrong list. He had, you know, few other lists from other places he was resetting majlises. And he took out the wrong list and he read the long list. Now what will be your reaction? You know, I mean, no, all the credit has gone to them. I did all this work and all the credit has gone to them. Now what do I do? Right? What do I do in that case? Right? Now, do I say, listen, I need my money back? Or do I say that no, let them have the reward for it? I mean, who are they? Are they not mu'min? Are they not Shia? Okay, it happened. So let them have the reward for it. What is our attitude? My friend, this is Isar. You know, this is Isar. Isar is what? You know, when you see that something is going, that should come to you, going to someone else, let him have it. He's a mu'min also. He's a mu'min also. You see, this is, my friends, what Isar is. And here is where it's decided who will be just, you know, there looking at Imam Hussein and loving him, and those who will give their lives for Imam Hussein. It's decided with this attitude. Those who have Ithar, they will reach Karbala and give their lives there. You know, there was a time when in an encampment, army encampment, the people who were in the army encampment, right? You know, there are many issues there when you're living together in a camp, an encampment, right? In a camping, this and that. So there are many issues that happen in a camp, you know? All these things happen. And those people in that camp, they said, you know what? Well, one issue we never had in our camp was who's going to do the dishes. We never had this issue. There was no discussion. Nothing happened. I mean, we never used to worry about it. Nothing. Who used to do the nothing? We didn't used to worry about it. One of this person was transferred to another camp. And when he went there, I mean, because in this camp, they used to talk about everything else. You know, let's do this and strategies and this and that and pondering and doing all kinds of things. When he was transferred to another camp, when he went to the next camp, the main issue that the whole camp was dealing with and arguing about is who's going to do the dishes. Who's going to do the dishes? So now everyone is saying, no, you know, we all need to have turns. Everyone needs to take a turn doing it. Everyone. He said, why are we, you know, like arguing about this? We never argued about there. So why is it that this argument and this is an issue in this camp and is not an issue in that camp? And you know what he realized? You know, there were some people who were giving their time and doing this hard work without telling anyone else. And because of that, the whole camp had the opportunity to think about something else. See that? And in this camp, because no one is ready to do Ithar, so now everyone's involved in this issue. Friends, it is the Ithar of some that makes a movement run. Those who do Isar, they give the opportunity to others to grow and to do other things. This is what Isar does. This is Isar. And this is when we learn these things, then we understand, you know, that who's running these shows? There's someone who's doing Isar somewhere. And when no one does Isar, then the problem comes on everyone. And it becomes a problem for everyone. This is why it is the Isar of those who are the helpers of Imam that is making this movement run. It's giving you the chance to do other things. Because they are behind the scenes doing the work. Isar is that, my friend. Salawat ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. Here, one ayat I will read. In regards to Ithar, so we understand it from the Quran also. You do this in this ayat I have here from Surah Hashr, ayat number 9. For those who want to do their research, he says, "Our Allah says, 'Walladina tabawwa uddara wal iman min qablihim yuhibbuna man hajara ilayhim wala yajiduna fi sudurihim hajatan.'" Allah is speaking about the Ansar of Medina. And he's saying that there are those that Allah has established them in the land, made them well established, meaning He gave them homes, He gave them businesses, and He made them firm in their iman. So they're established people, not, you know, people who are poor or something. They're established. They have homes, they have been living there, they have well established businesses and everything, and they have iman. So now what happens, he says, they are who? Yuhibbuna man hajara ilayhim. They love those who make hijrat to them. You see, who are these people? The people of Medina. They were Ansar. They were established by Allah in the land. So they became rich. They have money. And they had Iman also. Two things. Iman and wealth. When they come together, what happens? They love those people who make hijrah to them. They love them. Why do they love them? He says that in their hearts, they have no wanting for anything that they have. Meaning when they look at the others, they have no wanting for anything that they have. No liking at all. Whatever I have is yours. And they prefer those who migrate towards them over themselves, even though they might be in need. Meaning even if you are in need, you want to give what you have over to them. This was the attitude of the people of Medina. Allah is speaking about them here, and He's saying that, listen, when the people of Makkah made hijrat and they came to them, they accepted them in such a way that they would prefer them over themselves. Them over themselves. This is the attitude of Ithar. You prefer others over yourself. Meaning, Allah, you gave me wealth, you gave me Iman. Now my turn is those who will come towards me. They are in need. They left everything that they have. So now I'm going to prefer them over myself. Let's see. What did Allah give us? What did Allah give us, my friends? Allah gave us the opportunity to come here, settle down, have businesses, money, wealth. And then He gave us Iman. He made us firm in Iman. Now the people of Makkah are coming towards you. People of Makkah are coming towards you. Who are the people of Makkah? They left their whole families and their lives, and they are making hijrat towards Islam. Now you have people who come towards you, who leave their families, who leave everything, convert to Islam, and they come to you. Now we have to see what is our attitude. Do we prefer them over ourselves? Or do we say, what are these people doing in our masjid? You see, my friends, those who have ithar are different. When they see someone come and they say, you became Muslim, you made your hijrah to Islam, let me now, let my life be a comfort to you. I will give up my life so that you can be happy. See, my friends, this is ithar. You want to be with Imam Hussein? This is very easy things that I'm telling you. How can you be with Imam Hussein? How can you be with Imam Hussein? This is what Imam Hussein is teaching us. You want to be with Imam Hussein, then do Ithar. Prefer others who are coming to Islam over yourself and say, I am here for you. I will give everything I have so that you can be happy. This is when Ithar is established, my friend. You see? Now we need to look at ourselves. Where are we in this quality? Do we have it? Do we don't have it? How can we gain it? Salawat ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. Ithar is not just with wealth. It's not only wealth that you give. Right? It's not only wealth. It's many other things, my friends. Ithar, you do with everything you have. Right? When you go to the higher levels, then certain things you have, Allah will ask for ithar for that also. You know? If you have izzat, Allah will ask for that also. He says, give it up. Can you do that? You see, these are things, you know, you want to go higher levels and want to be in Karbala. This is where Ithar deals with you. Are you ready to give up your izzat, your reputation for Allah, for others? It's difficult, my friend. So now, let me just see that not only is it wealth, but it's also your opinion, your view. Well, you know, like we all have views and everyone has their view and they have 2 cents that they have to give. If we know Mu'mineen, everyone has many 2 cents in their pocket to give. Right? They always have their 2 cents and they are ready to give it. Right? And they want to give it. Let me just expand on this and we will go from here and inshallah end it. Salawat ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. When you listen to someone who is rich and powerful, he makes more sense. When you listen to someone who's influential, he makes more sense. Really, this is a reality of life. You know, a professor of a university, have you ever heard him speak? He will come with initials that are larger than his name. Right? And he comes and he will vomit the garbage that comes from his mind. And when the spew comes out, you look at it and says, oh, doctor said it. And the same thing if my barber says, he's just a barber. The same garbage, if my barber says that garbage, you see, you know, we don't even pay attention to him. But because that guy is saying it, it makes more sense. See, understand this? Same thing they're saying. But you see, just because he has credentials, in our perception, we think that he makes more sense. It's the reality of life. Most people, they listen like this. Most people. When you listen to someone who has power, you will see that he will make more sense. I mean, if you look at the speeches or the sayings of George Bush and compare them to retards, objectively, without any name, you will see that the retard, I'm saying, that they will make more sense than he does. Right? They'll make more sense than he does. But why is it that the world is paying attention when he speaks as a president? Because he's a president who's speaking. You see, someone who has power in the perception of people makes more sense. Understand this, my friends. This is the reality of life that we face with. And here is where you see Amirul Mu'mineen alayhi salam. He has a khutbah in Nahjul Balagha regarding this. He said, there are those people who accept what their imam is saying without even knowing what they're accepting. You see, I'm on the minbar here. If I say something from the minbar and you just accept it just because Maulana said it, not knowing what he is saying, Imam Ali is speaking about that. He's saying, I am speaking from the minbar. And these people I see, they're people who accept what I say without knowing what I'm saying. Imam Ali said, these people are useless for me. Such followers are useless for me. Why are you listening to me? Why are you accepting what I'm saying? The only reason you're accepting what I'm saying is because I'm in power right now. I'm sitting on the minbar. I'm sitting on the throne. Meaning if I wasn't on the throne, then you wouldn't be listening to me. You wouldn't be accepting what I said. So you don't listen to Imam Ali, you listen to this throne, whoever sits on it. Whoever sits on it, that's who you listen to. There's a difference, my friends. Why? Because their view, they don't want to give up that view. They have a view, they don't want to give up. They will accept that which is from power and someone who's rich and influential. They'll accept it from them. If such is the following, then they're useless for Imam. Why? Because you see, the same people who used to accept what Imam Ali said when he was Khalifa, The same people who used to fight with Imam Ali in his army, who were riding alongside Imam Ali, the same people were the ones who ended up being the killers of Imam Hussein. Shimr, Shabath, all of these people who came to kill Imam Hussein were soldiers of Imam Ali, who used to sit in the khutbah of Imam Ali, who used to pray behind him. Same people. So what's the use of these type of followers? You're only following Ali because of the fact that he is in power right now. If he is not in power, you'll follow someone else. This is not following, my friends. Why is it so easy for you to give up your view? Meaning, what they're doing is this. They're sacrificing their view, their opinion, for the opinion of whatever is coming from the member. Why are you sacrificing? Just because of power, not because of haq. If you had accepted Ali as your imam who came from Allah, then yes, whatever he says you accept. Why? Because you know the link is to haq. But if the only reason you're accepting from him is because he's on the minbar, if he was in his house somewhere, I would listen to him. Yes. My friends, this is what's very important for us to understand. You're sacrificing your view for what? For power. I'll give an example from Quran. Musa came to Khidr, Prophet Khidr, and said, I want to study under you. I want to be your student. So Khidr said what? He said, all right. But he looked at Musa and said, I don't think you can be patient with me. I don't think you can do it. Musa said, I'm Ulul Azam Prophet. Please give me that much credit. At least I can be a student, right? I mean, you're saying I can't be a student? I mean, what is Khidr trying to say here? He's trying to say that, listen, you will not be able to give up your view for my view. He said, I will. I won't say anything. He said, don't give your 2 cents, please. I won't. The first thing Khidr does, right away, Musa, 2 cents comes out. But what are you doing? This is that. Yeah, you became my teacher or what? Tell me. I told you, don't give your 2 cents. He said, okay, I won't. Next thing he does, again he comes out, gives his opinion. He says, don't give your opinion. I am the teacher here. Just listen to what I say and accept it without anything coming out of you. Are you ready to give up your opinion for my opinion? Musa said, yes. Okay, third time he went, did something. Again, Musa comes out. And this time, Khidr said, that's enough. It was compassionate for Khidr to do that because Musa was embarrassing himself. He said, that's enough of embarrassment. I don't want you to embarrass yourself more than this. You can't do it. You can't give up your opinion for me. The concept was, are you ready to sacrifice your opinion? Do ithar of your opinion for my opinion? Are you ready to do that? That was the whole idea, the moral of the story between Musa and Khidr. Did you understand that? Is it clear? If it's clear, read aloud salawats. So if it's clear, my friends, just one thing I will mention. One thing I'll mention and that's it. Is this, tell me. Khidr was a teacher. Musa was a student. Khidr is telling Musa, give up your opinion for my opinion. Accept what I say. Give it up. Sacrifice it. Do ithar of it. Right? Now, I'll ask you a question. Tell me, who is greater? Is Khidr greater or is Imam Mahdi greater? Who? Imam Mahdi. I mean, Khidr will be his soldier, right? When Imam comes back, he will be behind him. Right? So Imam is greater than Khidr. Now, tell me, Who is lesser in rank? We or Hazrat Musa? He's lesser in rank or we are lesser in rank? Why is Ulul Azam prophet? I have to give him something like that. You know, we haven't become those Shias yet. Don't think that we are way up there, you know. He's looking at us. Those are different people. Right? Different people. We have to give it to him that he is Ulul Azam prophet. Yes, he is greater than us, right? So the gap between Khidr and Musa is very less. The gap between us and Imam is very great. Where is Imam and where are we? So now, just like Khidr is asking Musa, Imam Zamana is asking us, are you ready to do ithar of your views and opinions for my views and opinions? If you're ready to give up your views and your opinions for mine, then I'm ready to come back to you. I'm ready to come back to you. But if you still have 2 cents to offer, keep offering until you run out. Right? And then I'll come back. And friends, this is the whole idea of ithar. Ithar is not wealth. It's also your opinions, your views. Give it up. Give it up for Imam. Give it up for someone else. Right? My friends, giving it up for someone else is hard. Right? For someone else is hard. Right now, you know, Shaitan, the enemies, want us to keep Imam Hussein in Karbala and keep Ithar in Karbala. What do you mean by that, Mawlana? What I mean by that is this. He says, yes, when you ask a mu'min to do this for Imam Hussein, everyone's ready. Yes, for Imam Hussein, I'll do it. No problem. Anything for Imam Hussein. I'll give it. For Imam Hussein, anything. Okay, how about a mu'min? How about this other mu'min? Inshallah for Imam Hussein. Why can't you do it for this moment? He said, until you do not learn how to give up for the other mu'min, you haven't become Shia yet. You haven't become Shia yet, my friends. Right? You haven't become Shia yet. We are way behind. This is the lessons we need to learn. Why can't you do it for someone else? Isn't he a lover of Imam Hussein? Isn't he a mu'min? Isn't he a Shia? If you don't have it in you to do that, and Imam Hussein is saying, if you can't give it up to someone who loves me, you can't, my friends. This is it. This is Isar, my friends. Let us now, inshallah, look at this. Let's go to Karbala. Right, and see the ithar of the companions. You know, when the companions on the night of Ashura, they had a meeting with each other. They had a meeting with each other, and they decided on themselves. They asked, you know, Ahlul Bayt, anyone from Ahlul Bayt. Bani Hashim, they said, please go away. We want to meet ourselves. Just ourselves. We want to meet. We don't want you here. So they asked Abbas to leave. Please, you know, go there, something. We want to meet ourselves here first. They came together. And they said that, listen, this is, these, inside these tents, is the blood of Rasulullah. Inside these tents is the blood of Rasulullah. Right? These are the children of Rasulullah. These are the women of Rasulullah. They told each other. They said, you know what? I would not be insan if I let anything happen to this. Habib said, I will never forgive myself if I let anything happen to them. He told the others, Burair, you know, you're right. You're right. Anything, as long as we are alive, we will not let anything happen to them. We will do whatever we can. That is our job tomorrow, to make sure that no harm comes to them. Imagine this. This is the companions of Hussein. You know, I mean, this fervor that they had in their heart. Now, when Burair left that meeting, he was walking past some of the tents, and he heard Zainab talking to Hussein. When Hussein left there and he came into the tent of Zainab, he heard Zainab talking to Hussein, and Zainab was saying, "Brother, are you sure about these companions? Are they going to stay with you? Are you sure they will not run away?" Zainab knows, because in her experience, she has seen how the companions have ran away from Ali and how they ran away from Imam Hassan. She knows what will happen. She knows what people, who people are and what they did to her brother and her father. She is asking Imam Hussein, "Tell me, brother, are you sure that these people will not run away?" Burair heard the statement of Zainab. And as, you know, he was completely shattered. He was completely shattered that Zainab doesn't trust them. He came to Habib and he called all the companions together and said, Habib, the sister of Hussein does not trust us. The family of Hussein does not trust that we are going to stay with them. We need to do something about this." And you know what they did? They came out with their swords out, rolled up their sleeves, and came in front of the tent of Hussein and said, Hussein came out and said, "What's happening at this time of the night? What's happening at this time of the night? Why are you out here?" I said, "Hussein, we have heard that your family does not trust us, that they think that we will run away from you. Hussein, we just want to ask Zainab to come so that we can give our testimony to Zainab." Zainab heard from behind the tent. She came up to the door of the tent and she stood behind. And these men spoke to her from outside the tent. You know, this was the last time Zainab was given that respect of being talked to from behind the tent. This is the last time someone gave her that much respect that they would talk to her from behind the tent. And each man, they said, "Hussein, we want to tell you, we'll put these swords on our neck. If you don't trust us, we will cut off our own necks in front of you. We want you to trust us that we will not run away from Hussein." My friends, this is what they're giving up for Imam Hussein and his family. Really, this is what we are giving up for Imam Hussein and his family. The Isar that we see in Karbala and throughout Karbala, how can we not look at that Isar and just understand from there what it means to be with the Imam, what it means to be with the Imam. Just one hadith I will mention, inshallah, we will end the Masaib and you give your condolences to Rasulullah and Fatima. You give your condolences to Rasulullah and Fatima, for friends. You know, the people of Karbala, there's no way that you can compare them to anyone else. There's no way that you can compare those who were with Imam Hussein to anyone else. Each of them were in a completely high state of being. And if someone can be distinct in that group, they're elite. And if someone can be distinct in that group, there must be something that he had done that made him that good. My friends, in Karbala, everyone has an amazingly high position that we cannot even comprehend. And if someone in that group can be above the others, then imagine what kind of ithar he has done. My friend, you know, even in Karbala, we see there's a difference. In Karbala, those people of Karbala, there's a difference. Everyone is on one side and Abul Fazl al-Abbas is on the other side. Allah wanted it that Abbas should be buried in separate place and everyone else should be buried with Hussein, so that everyone know that Abbas has a place. That Abbas has a place that no one else has. Imam Sajjad said, "Inna li ammi al-Abbas, for my uncle Abbas on the day of judgment is the place that everyone will look up to him." Abbas, what have you done to gain that position, Abbas?
What have you done to gain that position, Abbas? That rank that even amongst the people of Karbala, you are treated like this, Abbas. Maybe you see Abbas, when you look at Abbas and you see him, what he was made for and what he was brought about for. When you look at Abbas, how he sacrificed everything. He sacrificed everything for what? Abbas came to defend Imam Hussein. He came to defend Imam Hussein. But he never had the chance to defend him. He never had the chance to defend him. My friends, for everyone else, what Abbas had, no one else had and no one else will ever have. You know what Abbas had? He had the alam of Hussein in his hand. He had the alam of Hussein and Islam in his hand. That is the last time anyone held up the alam and the flag of Islam in their hand. That was Abbas. Abbas was the last person to hold it up. No one else now can hold it up other than Abbas. That's why it's called the alam of Abbas. Because this is his alam from now until the day of judgment. Alam, he hold it up. But you know, he didn't do it for the alam. He didn't do it for that position. You know what Abbas did it for? When Abbas was there in Karbala and he wanted to go on the battlefield, he came to Imam Hussein and said, Hussein, let me go. Let me go on the battlefield. Hussein said, Abbas, if you go, what will happen to this army? You are the flag bearer. Abbas, his eyes were down. For a minute, he looked up at Hussein and put his eyes down. He said, Mawla, which army are we speaking of? Mawla, there is no army here. It was Sakina who came to Abbas and said, my uncle Abbas, I'm dying of thirst here. Can you bring some water for us? Abbas looked at Hussein and said, Mawla, at least let me go bring some water for these children. They're thirsty. Let me bring some water for them. Do something humanitarian. I will not go to fight. Let me do something for them so that they can live. Hussein said, yes, Abbas, go ahead. You may go. You know, it is also said that when Abbas came to the tent of Zainab, because Hussein asked him to go there, he said, you know, Zainab had a special place in Karbala. We don't know the maqam of Zainab. She had a special place for everyone, for Hussein, and everyone knew that position. In Bani Hashim, they all knew Zainab's position. That's why everyone would go and seek that permission from her. They would seek that approval from her that yes, you may go. And Abbas went there to seek her approval. When he went in front of Zainab, Zainab knew that what Abbas wanted. She had seen enough that day to understand what's going on. All Zainab said to Abbas was, you know, my brother. You know, my brother, I used to hear from childhood that my hands would be tied in ropes, but I never believed it. I said, how can my hands be tied in ropes when I have brothers like you around me? But Abbas, I have understood now that you're leaving me. That this will always have, this will also happen to me. Abbas went, and he went to get the water. We know the history. I just want you to take you to that place where Abbas is now returning with the water. You know, he came to the water. He felt the breeze of the stream. The breeze when it hit the stream. Abbas, I don't know what he was thinking, but what he said is written down in our books. What he said by the river, what he said is that, oh, nafs of Abbas, do not be tempted by this water, because the children of Hussein are dying of thirst. I will never forgive myself if I get close to this. Abbas filled up that water bag and he went backwards. And when he went backward, they knew that his hands were full and they started attacking him with arrows. You know, first the arrows started coming towards him, lances from far. They wouldn't get near him. So many arrows went into him and he was trying to protect the water bag that there were so many arrows in him that he wasn't able to move that much. When they saw that his movement was restricted, that's when they mustered up the courage to come towards him. They came towards him and they cut off his right hand. When they cut his right hand off. He switched the water back into his left hand and held the flag up. And then when they cut off the left arm, he put the water back into his mouth and the flag fell down. It was at this point that Sakina lost her hope. She was waiting there by the tents with the children saying, "Children, come here. You don't know my uncle Abbas. When he makes a promise, he doesn't break his promise. I know Abbas will bring this water to us. Today we will get water. Don't worry. My uncle Abbas has gone to get water." When the flag fell down, and Sakina just looked, where did the flag go? You know, there came a time that now Abbas was going on. He was not deterred by the fact that his hands were cut. It came a point that now an arrow went into the water bag. When it went into the water bag, the water spilled over. And that's when Abbas lost his hope. Abbas lost his hope. Now he didn't want to move forward. He just stood in one place. He doesn't care now what will happen to him. Now you can do whatever you want. Because the purpose of Abbas's life is finished right now. This was my purpose and I was living for this. If I can't get the water to the children, then what's the use of living? Abbas stood there on the horse and the arrow started coming. One of the arrows went into the eyes of Abbas. You know, one of the arrows went into the eyes of Abbas. And just let me just finish it here in challenge. You give your condolences. Let me just finish it here, my friend. When the arrow went into the eye of Abbas... It was his right eye. It went inside the eye. It was stuck in there. In Najaf, I read this incident that in Najaf, there was a Zakir who was reading this Masaib of Abbas, and he came to this point and he said that, you know, this arrow went into the eye of Abbas, and people were crying for that. Another alim who was there, he said, "Listen, this thing you have read, I haven't read this thing. I don't know if it's authentic. You know, you shouldn't be reading this." This alim was an ayatollah. He came to him and said that. And this ayatollah himself says, "You know, that night Abbas came in my dream. You know, Abbas came in my dream. I saw Abul Fadl Abbas said, 'Mawla, you're in my dream.' He said, 'Yes. And I came to tell you that you were not, that you were unjust with me. You're not good to me.' He said, 'Why, Mawla? What did I do?' He said, 'You said that the arrow did not went in my eye.' He said, 'Yes, I haven't read it any place.' But he says, 'Let me tell you, the arrow did go into my eye. The arrow did go into my eye. It was stuck in my eye. I didn't care about the arrow. I was caring about the water, but when the water spilled, I had a hard time making sure. I didn't know if the water spilled or not. I was trying to look down and see." And you know what was bothering me the most at that time? What was bothering me the most was, I wanted to take that arrow out. Every time I tried, my arms were cut. I couldn't do it. And I was shaking my head to get that arrow out of my Ya Mahmud, Bhakke Muhammad. Ya Allah, Bhakke Ali, Ya Fatir al-Samawat, Bhakke Fatima. Ya Mohsin, Bhakke Hassan, Ya Qadim al-Hassan, Bhakke Hussain. Oh Allah, give us the tawfiq and the blessing to be on the right path. Give us the wisdom to understand your guidance. Increase the love of Ahl al-Bayt in our hearts and in the hearts of our children. Make our feet firm on the path of Islam. Give us the strength in our arms to raise the flag of Islam. Oh Allah, we ask you to hasten the reappearance of our Imam, to make us his helper when he comes. Oh Allah, accept this ibadat from us.
those who are in need over here amongst the community and everywhere. Allah, help them to fulfill their needs. Oh Allah, we ask you to give us the tawfiq that we are able to be with the mission of Imam Zaman. Batim Hussain.